there's going to be opportunities inside the game to be a difference maker for a lot of different guys. Just being able to wrap your arms around that opportunity and get it done. And I can't tell you who that person is going to be, because a lot of times it might not be one of your top guys. It might be a net front guy that's tipping a puck. But there's going to be an opportunity inside the game playing our system that you're going to take advantage of, whether it's in the first period, second period, third period. Just be ready to embrace that shift and embrace that opportunity. Make the right play at the right time.
Opportunity to clinch in Boston tonight. Sabres lead this series 3-2 heading into Game 6, 7.5 hours from now. Welcome into Sabres Live. With Marty, I'm Brian. Dan's going to join us here in just a little bit as the Sabres are, you know, once, like everybody in this position, you're just looking for a hero, and your hunch for a hero tonight is, sorry, look at this pained look on your face.
It's
like I'm
painful.
Stressing it right off the top.
I know, that is stressful, because my hunch wants to say Rasmus Dahlin. Like, he scored a goal in the power play last game. It could have been, like, a deciding factor into the Game 5 and into the series. And then, I mean, obviously, I watched last night, and I'm like, well, Jackson Lacombe against McDavid, the way that he played, Quinn Hughes with Minnesota. I'm like, maybe it's the, you know, the defenseman's time to shine in these playoffs. So I'm going to go with Rasmus Dahlin.
That's some pretty good foreshadowing. Did you know that Dahlin is the Sabres' leading road point producer this year? He had 40 points away from home in 38 games this season.
I did not know that, and I think it makes my argument or my selection even better. Mm-hmm. And look, as the captain, you have guys that need to step up. I talked about leadership last game. So who's the leaders that are going to step up? And obviously, you want to see your top guys stepping up. You want to see your secondary and your depth guys stepping up as well. But for me, it's all about Thompson, Dahlin, Tuck. But I'm really zeroing on Dahlin in the game tonight.
So, having just heard from Lindy Ruff off the top from yesterday's media availability, and that is now newly named and expected Jack Adams finalist, Lindy Ruff, how do you think his message to some of those star players that you just noted, but the team in general, how do you sense that has changed since your days playing under him, and even knowing what it was like for others much, you know, earlier than you in Sabres time,
so
playing under Lindy?
Yeah, the biggest thing with Lindy is that he's been able to adjust and adapt over the years. Like, you know, playing with Dominik Hasek as your goalie is one thing, and the way that you had Michael Pekka, and you know, and then it went to a little bit of a dip, obviously. You know, there was some organizational, like, issues with ownership and whatnot. Then it became a much more offensive type of team, but he adjusted to that with the new rules coming off of the 2004-05 lockout. And I think even in the last 2 years, there's been an adjustment, right, where Lindy came in as year one, evaluating, trying to figure out what's the best place. Tage Thompson, is he a center? Is he a wing? That was a big question. Mm-hmm. Even this year, it was a question. Start of the season, is Tage a winger? Is Tage a center? Tage kept saying, I like center more. Lindy kept saying, I think he can still produce.
Am I wrong to say that it might have gone even a couple of months into the season?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Because we were into November, and, you know, Tage was like, I like playing in the middle. Lindy was like, I think Tage can produce on the wing. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a little battle. Well, now we know Tage is in the middle. That's the way it is. So, yeah, there's been some adjustments that Lindy had to make, and I think that's why it's being recognized as a finalist for the Jack Adams Trophy given to the best coach in the National Hockey League.
What do you think his odds are?
Right now, I think I looked at it yesterday.
John Cooper, Dan Muse, by the way, are the other finalists.
Okay, so John Cooper, Dan Muse. I think that Lindy was the clear leader in the odds, even like as like minus 400. Mm-hmm. And then John Cooper, it was Dan Muse second and John Cooper third when I saw the odds yesterday before we made our prediction on the show.
You know why I'm chuckling?
Why?
Nothing. Nothing rankles people outside of the Eastern time zone more than an award being whittled down to just three Eastern Conference people. So from the Central on out to Pacific right now, there are large eye rolls that have, you know, people feel that the efforts of Bednar.
Yes.
Or pick any team in the Central as yeah. Dallas, Minnesota, Colorado were all, you know, top
five. It was
five,
going to be hard to pick it was Gullison going to be. Or Hines above Bednar. Because they finished second and third.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to be hard to have Bednar in there. And the only reason I'm saying this is because it's kind of like, what have you done for me lately?
Of course.
Colorado had such a strong start that if you look at the Colorado Avalanche season as a whole, you're like, eh. Like, they weren't the best team in the NHL in the second half of the season.
Well, that was hard. Buffalo was playing at an almost 800 clip.
I understand, but if you're looking at... Okay, who's going to be a
They still ran away with the league.
They did run away with the league, which is why a lot of people would say, well, Jared Bednar should be there. He still managed them after the great start to run away. And listen, these votes don't come in after the first round. They don't come in the first round.
And these are from the broadcasters, too, by the way.
And they come in at the end of the regular season. So maybe after the first round, you'd say, well, Bednar in Colorado, they swept L.A., that's... Mm-hmm. He should be in there. And Dan Muse in Pittsburgh lost. Well, that doesn't happen then. Well, that happens before.
Okay, so congratulations to Lindy on being named a finalist for the Jack Adams. And when you look at what's ahead, which is most important, obviously, get the focus back on Game 6 tonight. And the fact that Logan Stanley missed practice yesterday, was under the weather. He's going to try it this morning, and they'll see how it goes for Logan. If not, Kesselring is the expected player to come in. Does that surprise you in any way?
It doesn't surprise me because I think you're looking at size, you're looking at the role, the way you have to play. When I saw Kesselring with Timmins yesterday, the only thing that was surprising is because you have two right-handed shots. So two right-handed shots will be a little bit kind of like, well, who's playing left, who's playing right, what does that mean? But I do feel that you're looking at size. You're looking at the role that you have to play if Stanley can't go. But you know what? Like Logan Stanley, I would, you know, my history with those situations is you get on the ice, you practice, and you're like, I'm good to go. Like if he wasn't in Boston, if he didn't travel, then I would say, okay, probably not like in healthy enough to go because he was ill. But I do believe that now that he's here, skated this morning, I would anticipate Logan Stanley to be in the lineup.
Nothing else is, or let me rephrase it, is there anything else then that is top of mind for you, whether it's the uncertainty around Stanley, the Norris in for Östlund up front, the continuation of Alex Lyon in goal? Is there anything that is more top of mind or something else that needs to be hit on here?
Well, I think it's split in two. Josh Norris coming back is, for me, the biggest thing. Like, okay, how does that make the Doan and Benson line at 5-on-5 and your depth, especially on the road, having to roll your lines and trying to build off of one another? But the power play, because now we saw the power play getting their first power play goal of the month of April. Well, you know what? We flipped the calendar to May. We waited until the last game in April to get a power play goal. Maybe we get a goal in the month of May, and Tage did not get his goal duffer.
Oxford Pennon is working on a new banner for us.
Which is?
Power play goals only matter when they matter. Because number two in the playoffs, Dallas, number three, Edmonton on the power, boom, gone.
Well, you know
now,
what?
Now, it would have helped Edmonton if their penalty kill had operated at better than 50%, so that might have changed things a little bit. But
about 80% of the game is played at 5-on-5.
Correct.
So when you get your 5-on-5 game going, and if you can dominate that 5-on-5, I just don't think the Sabres have dominated the 5-on-5 game as much as maybe you would want.
Yeah.
And then the power play would give you that boost. So Norris on the power play, obviously, I would anticipate he slides into the Östlund spot on the top power play unit as well. So that is one thing that I'm, you know, kind of paying attention on.
As happens on every game day, we have a Twitter poll that would like to get you involved in our discussion today at Sabres Live. We are asking which... And this is almost an age-old question based on this rivalry. Which current Bruin bothers you the most? Is it David? See, before I can even spit out the answers, for a certain generation, it's Brad Park. Yes. But anyway, David Pastrnak, Nikita Zadorov, Jeremy Swayman, or other. This is actually a really fun question. You can tell because I can't stop laughing, knowing the expected responses, like from Emily, who says, is all an acceptable answer? Yes, Emily, all would be an acceptable answer. Yeah, Jason said McAvoy, and I think this is a, not that he has, maybe he does have strong feelings on this. This might be the perfect time to welcome Dan Dunleavy in to answer this very question.
I have a ton of respect, but a growing dislike for Mark Kastelic, the way he plays. And then, you
that
know,
guy was way down on the depth chart, by the way, as far as answers.
I can imagine, but only because he's a driver for everything you want from a fourth line guy that just gets in there, mucks it up, and is annoying. I don't know if it's a hate, really. I do hate how well Swayman's playing, but I think the Sabres are a little bit guilty of maybe making life harder
you?
On him.
Yeah, this
does
is a
Swayman
bother
you?
Bother? No, he doesn't.
I think Pastrnak bothers me.
Zadorov makes me laugh. I don't. He doesn't bother me. I think.
Yeah.
He's, I think.
I know. He's, I wasn't laughing when he snapped his stick over Dalene.
I know what you're saying, but I mean as a, I mean you know it's a question that yes from a player's and what he's doing on the ice. I don't know. Aside from what he did to Dalene, I haven't seen, except for maybe game one in the series, that Zadorov has been a big factor, to be honest with you. He tried to be this disruptor.
You know what bothered me last game? And I love the guy, is Henry Yokiariu. He bothered me because all he kept doing is this.
Oh, yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He kept, like, grabbing, bear-hugging all of his former teammates.
You,
like, almost like I'm so happy to see you.
Imagine that this is sometimes called
the little
right?
tug,
the, like the sl- and a full on Bruin bear hug for extended length of time.
Yeah.
So that bothered
not
me.
Not a call.
That bothered me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Henry, hot takes. You bothered me. There you go.
Yeah. Henry's the kind of the last person you would put on this list as a guy who could offend you or bother you in any way.
Even when he does it, you're like, Henry, you're so lovable.
So
I felt that way about Casey coming in. I said, Casey
Mittelstadt,
who has had a penchant for scoring big moment goals, particularly in Buffalo, right? RJ's legacy and everything else. He always was the guy in those couple of games that stood up, and I thought, please, just don't, you're done, okay? and the bounce off the glass, too, at the end of the regular season.
And he's the one that fell on Austin's leg.
Way to go. I don't care he's a nice guy. Maybe he bothers me now. Okay. Okay, you talked me into one.
All right. Now that we've got all this negativity out of our system, what are you thinking about tonight?
Is Logan Stanley healthy? And if Kesselring goes in, can he do what I have seen Logan do that I like, which is use his size, use his length? And you're talking about 5-on-5 play and obviously other areas of the game, but I've liked how Logan has just grown in confidence with fitting in with his team, and he's turned into a little bit of an eraser for me. You guys might see it differently. And if Kesselring is going to get an opportunity tonight, I'm really happy for him because I think there is just so much more to him that we haven't seen yet, and I know he's waiting to show it. And at the same time, you're always you know, you're calling the game and we're analyzing it together.
Yeah.
The conversation you want to have with anyone is just do 100% of what you do. Don't try to do any more. And I think the team will be fine having you in that spot. So I'm thinking, Brian, if Kesselring does go in, and Lindy didn't tip his cap anyway, but if I was going to play my guessing game as we're looking at rushes tonight, maybe he does get a game in here. And I just want him to be aggressive and close space early, because I think he can do that with his size. And then it's another good shot, too, to have from the point if he just plays freely.
Yeah, so it's interesting because in Game 5, Josh Norris was available, but they decided to give him an extra game, right? To like just, there was no rush to put him in. The series was 3-1 Buffalo. Your forward group was healthy.
Yep.
Noah Osland was filling in really, really nice in the middle of the Doan and Benson line. But now looking back, you're like, oh, like you don't want to just say we're gonna wait. Like, and I think that maybe the approach with Logan Stanley is, are you good to go?
Right.
Because we could give you an extra game and say you're gonna be fine Sunday for game 7. But do you want to just just put all your best people there. The people that have been playing, the people that have been performing, that have been handling the series, and have them all there. So for that reason, I say if Logan Stanley is skating this morning,
right,
and if he says, I'm 75%, you're good to go.
So in that specific conversation, I start thinking about the third period of a close game.
Yeah.
And how much do you want to shorten your bench when you potentially might have another game still to go? Mm-hmm. So I understand 100% what you're saying. I don't want to see Logan Stanley come out. But also, if Kesselring is a fireball that's ready to go in, yeah, and Lindy did say this morning he's liked what he's seen from him and his habits in practice, I'm sure he's not going to step up and say, I hate what I've seen from him anyway.
He's been terrible.
He's been awful, practice. But we're going to put him in. So for me, there is also the argument of a completely healthy, ready to go, no doubt if I need him in overtime, that I can't look down the bench and say, Logan just doesn't have it anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know
or
what
he's out of energy,
I don't know what the
or,
illness, yeah, whatever was going on is that he's fighting through. Hopefully, we all want to see everybody healthy.
Yes.
And as for Norris in lineup tonight, I know he didn't ask the question. Get in tight. I mean, such good hands. I don't know if the shot from the outside. Well, the shot from the outside with anyone in front of the goaltender's eyes,
yeah,
sure, it's effective. But the shot for the sake of a shot where it's just going to hit him in the logo and not go anywhere and then get a face-off, which you might not have possession, the puck's going the other way. I like his hands. I like him in a position where he doesn't need long to have it on his stick and just put it somewhere. Right?
Yeah,
and with Swain being
Chicago's
such a big
game,
guy, you need to put it somewhere.
You look at the goal against Chicago, the goal against Dallas. He's in the slot, and he's just beating the goalie clean.
Yeah.
Like, he can do that. Like, shoot.
So
like,
he
go
can
in
put
and
it.
Get 2-3 shots in that first period.
That'd be nice.
That'd be nice.
So you're going for a game total of 9 shots. I like that.
Yeah, couple of things.
If Josh Norris has 9 shots on goal, mm-hmm, he's got at least 2 goals tonight.
Yeah?
Yeah. I would take that bet.
So 9 shots on goal, not attempts.
Not
attempts.
Like, okay, if he gets 9 shots.
9 shot attempts or on?
I'm going to say on.
9 would, gets on to, would be.
That's a lot.
That's a game.
That would be a lot.
He would be
sorry,
the first
I'm just,
star.
I'm just looking at validating what I thought, and that is the fact that Timmins and Kesselring have essentially not even played together.
Yeah,
they've
so
played 5 minutes together this year.
Were they
as someone, you know, is a key piece, i.e. the goaltender, in the communication aspect back there, how do you view a situation like that where you know, a couple of guys don't have a lot of reps, or at this point in the year, like, does no one even think about it? Would that be the, like, because, and again, the only reason I ask it is because post-trade deadline, we saw all kinds of different combinations going through 6, 6 and 7, 7 and 8,
no, it's
8 and 9.
It's a great point for the situations that are going to come up tonight.
Right.
Communication between those two, and then it's a good question for you.
But at the same time, like, if Logan Stanley can't go, Michael Kesselring has been such a good guy having to deal with some bad luck this year and injuries. And if I was Alex Lyon in net, and I'm like, okay, out of everybody, out of Metsa, Shen, Kesselring, whoever, right, to come in to potentially play, I would almost want Kesselring to be given that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, say, well, okay, I want this guy to be in there because he deserves it, and everybody else deserves it, but I just...
But it's the communication factor between the pair that's played 5. Is that something as a goalie you're thinking?
At this point, like, that pair
is,
like, just... Get it out of the zone.
But because those two are not considered one of the pairs we have seen before, and the urgency, and I know you mentioned ice time and stuff like that, I think now it all goes out the window. It doesn't matter whether you were playing back-to-back or having 2 days in between.
No.
You're riding your horses. You're trying to win a series. And if you're tired at the start of the next series, no one cares because you got there. And that has to be the mentality. But would it be possible that we see mixed pairs more often? Remember what we saw. Metsa would often play with Dahlin.
Yes.
Samuelson would play with this player, with that. When you have two guys, potentially, that haven't played as much together.
I think that is a strong possibility, saying, okay, we're going to get Dahlin, Samuelson, Byram, Power. We'll come back with Dahlin and Timmins and Byram and Kesselring, and then we'll go Samuelson and Power, and then we'll come back to our routine. They did that really well this year, many, many times. So the one thing I can tell you is not going to happen, And usually when you have a defenseman that's injured or sick, you think of the possibility of going 11-7 because you're like, okay, what if we lose a defenseman? What if that defenseman is not, you know, 100% and now we're down to five? The Sabres are not going to go 11-7. They're going 12-6, and the six that are going to be there in the blue line are going to play. They trust their four lines up front. They don't want to go 11. Mm-hmm. They don't want to have to mix match. Last game, they basically had 11
forwards.
They
had 11, yeah.
And it ended up being what it ended up
being. Yeah, I mean, you can't say it didn't work. Obviously, they were hitting an own skate away
from winning
an overtime. But
they're not going to start a game with 11 forwards,
right,
that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, and half their defense corps play like forwards anyway, so
yeah.
I mean, not that fact.
No,
I know what you're saying, but
that makes them what they are.
If you did have to go 11-7, it's not as if, you know, you've got a couple guys in Byram and Dahlin who basically can play the wing on the wall.
That's like Yutaki. Hey, I need a shift of you up front, but you're playing it from the blue line.
I don't want to make Brian's point because I could be way off, but that's kind of the point we're at is, hey, you're throwing everything that you have, which I think personally, with respect to the Bruins, who are in the series and could very well win tonight and force a seventh game, the Sabres, when you look at the talent that's available on the roster and the different things they can do to you, I think Buffalo is hands down the deeper roster in that aspect. I think the Bruins are a shutdown team that have a couple guys up front that can score and a goaltender that right now is playing his best hockey of the season. But to your point of what you're bringing up, Ryan, that different mixes and matches that you can see, you know, yes, the Bruins changed their lineup a little bit, bringing Steves and I forget the other name right now that came in for Reichel in the last game. I don't know, they severely...
Acemont.
Acemont actually did play a good game.
He always plays,
every time he plays Buffalo for some reason.
And Arvidsson expected to be out again.
Stands out. So anyway, that's my point. I think if you shuffle the decks for Buffalo, I think you're still going extremely confident that you've got the deeper team. You just have to do the little things right. Lindy said this morning there were enough little things they didn't do right that cost them that fine edge that you're talking about in the last game.
Right, but they've been so great on the road, it's almost like the perfect reset for them. Here they come
100%.
Into Boston where they've already won twice in the series. And small sample sizes are always dangerous, but if you marry those small sample sizes of playoffs into the end of the regular season, you can probably create a conversation and a few questions about production down the middle. Even Tage Thompson has only scored in two of the last 11 games. Now, in each of those two, they were multi-goal games, so it feels like a bigger impact.
And game one was a huge impact.
Of course. Yeah. And then Ryan McLeod's goal scoring, well documented over the last 31 games before scoring two in the final three of the regular season. And even Josh Norris, who ended the season on a six-game offensive heater, had previously struggled goal scoring in the previous 15 games. So when you look at all three of them now coming into this game tonight, like where do you think that offensive pressure or that, you know, pressure to be a difference maker falls on the most?
So it's funny because I was watching practice yesterday, and we know that the Sabres and guys like Tage and Norris and McLeod, they love to attack off the rush. Mm-hmm. Boston's not giving them rush chances. They're basically... So what the Sabres were working on practice yesterday wasn't just getting to the red line and dumping it in, is attacking the red line and the blue line with speed and then making Boston decide, do we want to back off and be first on the puck?
Yeah.
Or do we want to play the rush? And there was a little tweak of saying, don't just come up the ice and we're dumping it in.
Yeah.
Come up the ice with pressure, with speed and a purpose.
Yeah, please don't do that. I've seen enough of the shoot it and just tip it in and then wait for Boston to get possession and bring it out. And to your point,
but that's good if the team isn't prepared for it. But Boston is prepared for it right now.
To your point, I know because you're getting your 1 minute here. I did talk to Tyson Kozak about that the other day in Boston, and I said, what was the difference in your gaining the zone last time as opposed to the rest of the series? And he did bring up the fact that it appeared you're carrying the puck right to the blue line, and he said, and we're doing it, and we're trying to create that 2-on-1 to make a defenseman make a decision. Are you going to flip it in? But they were close enough, these short little passes at the line, instead of a hope dump into the corner, that you actually had one defenseman who had to cover the pass, and the other defenseman, is he coming over to help, and is he vacating the middle? Wow. So you're making them
think.
That
was game 3 and 4. The Sabres were so good at that.
So that's to Brian's point about playing here in Boston. I got to think the mindsets, they're going to keep doing that until it doesn't work, because it worked.
Dan and Razor, of course, have the call tonight. They will be joining us when our pregame coverage begins at 7 on MSG. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate
Shayna Goldman is coming up from The Athletic. Her Friday time slot and lots to get to around the NHL. Stay with us on Sabres Live from Boston.
By Seneca Resorts and Casinos, nothing else comes close.
Q?
It's a game day, 7:30 start tonight from Boston. Our pregame coverage begins at 7, and we can't wait. We obviously are looking to see if the Sabres can clinch against the Bruins. It would be their third series win against Boston all time. This is the ninth playoff meeting between these two in series fashion. As promised, Shayna Goldman has joined us from The Athletic on the heels of a couple of teams being eliminated last night. Minnesota, convincing 5-2 win over Dallas to win that series in 6. Anaheim, a 5-2 win over Edmonton to win that series in 6. We will get to those momentarily. Shayna, do the Sabres wrap it up in 6 tonight?
I think so. I think that they've shown a lot of promise throughout this series, and I'm not going to hold Game 5 against them. I think the Noah Ostlund injury threw the entire lineup into a mess, right? Because anytime you're going from 12 forwards planned, it's not like they went in with 11-7. You go in with 12 forwards planned, and now you're missing a middle six center. It's going to throw everything out of sorts, and it felt like they were kind of out of sync. The game wasn't out of reach either. It's not like it was a complete blowout by Boston. It was the Jeremy Swayman show. But the key was that the Doan and Benson line that was so effective in Game 4 couldn't really gel with Kozak there. And the power play, which finally got a little bit of juice, again, was thrown into shambles. So it feels like there's an opening for them to take advantage of, especially with Josh Norris coming back into the lineup. And I think they're going to do it.
So Boston plays basically like three things. One is Jeremy Swayman. Two is their neutral zone where they just put five guys in the neutral zone. And three is the bear hug. They hug everybody and they never let go. Which one of these three things can the Sabres take advantage of tonight?
I'm going to say the neutral zone. I think that the Sabres' speed at times has been a problem for Boston. And I think we've seen at their best in this series, and, you know, the Sabres haven't played a perfect series by any means. Neither team has. But at their best, we see them pouncing on the foot speed of the Bruins as kind of an issue and forcing turnovers and playing really aggressive. So I think that's going to be what they can try to take advantage of tonight. I think Hampus Lindholm has oddly had a really rough series. I don't think that, you know, the top pair with McAvoy has been great. I don't think the Bruins' third pair has been great. So I think with the Sabre speed really through three lines, I think that they can make life difficult for Boston tonight.
We were talking earlier in the show just about production down the middle, and Thompson, McLeod, Norris, I think all individually would feel like they can do more. Have you seen anything from the three of those? Obviously, Norris is coming back in here, but like, you have great attention to detail in situations like this, players, whether they're cold or lukewarm or hot. What do you see for the three of them or one of the three of them as a potential difference maker tonight?
I think that McLeod had a rough game one and I think has gotten better as the series has gone on, but I would really be looking at that top six. I think that Norris, when he's healthy, can be really effective. And I think he has two wingers built for this kind of moment, this kind of game. And I feel like the Doan Benson line is going to be what takes over tonight. So I think that Josh Norris is going to get on the board. If he can get himself into shooting position and let the other two cook, right? Benson's really good in transition. I think Doan is too. They're both good at jumping on turnovers and being great around the boards to win these battles. And they've done it really well so far this series. If they can do that and Norris can be in a shooting position, I think he's the forward, the center, that's going to have that big moment of the three.
I said Rasmus Dahlin will be the one with the biggest impact in tonight's game. And part of that is because I saw Quinn Hughes have a major impact yesterday. Jackson Lacombe having an impact in that first round. So do you think that Dahlin can, you know, put the team on his back, power play and 5-on-5 and make that difference in the game?
I think so. I think we've been waiting for a Dahlin moment in this series, right? Because Samuelson, he comes up big in game one. And I think we've seen Bo Byram look like the Bo Byram of Avalanche years past, right? And have that playoff pedigree behind him. But Dahlin has just been okay. And his okay is still above average, right? It's better than most defensemen. But he is the heartbeat of this team, right? Like, there's a reason why he's number five on my Hart Trophy ballot this year. He is their MVP, and he does all of the little things right. And I think they've managed his usage in the right way this year to unlock him a little bit more offensively. I think we're going to see him thrive in transition and have those big moments. Because, right, like, the series is, it's, you add up all the little details and that matters here. But with elimination on the line for the Bruins, and with the Sabres wanting to end this, rightfully so, right, because the momentum could swing the other way, and the Bruins' experience could be a huge factor in Game 7 here, is someone has to have those big moments, and I don't think you could pick a better player than Dahlin.
Do you spend a lot of time, once the series gets going, analyzing how the coaches are handling this? This is relevant, obviously, because Lindy was named one of the finalists for the Jack Adams today, but we talked yesterday that both Ruff and Sturm certainly are deserving of great consideration based on significant year-over-year improvement here.
Yeah, I think the coaching battle is one of the most interesting parts of the playoffs, and I know that's a boring answer, but listen, the regular season matchups come and go. You have to turn the page. You're not looking at it like, okay, who does Dahlin face off against with Boston this time, and then 2 months later, it's totally different, right? In a playoff series where everyone is completely focused on one team, every single little detail is going to be under the microscope, and I think the matchup game is maybe the most fascinating part of it, with home ice shifting back and forth here every other game. So yeah, the coaching battle is a huge part of the equation here. I think Sturm deserves a lot of credit for what the Bruins have been this year despite the odds against them, although that defense I'm still not loving from Boston, but I think Lindy Ruff and his coaching staff has done a really good job here as well, because the Sabres are playing the way that I think Lindy Ruff tries to get a team to play in recent years. We saw it with the Devils, that rush-based attack, that speed. They obviously have added a lot more forechecking to it to add some balance. So, yeah, the coaching, how they handle this, how they deploy their players, it's going to be interesting to see with the Bruins having home ice tonight. But if not, that's something that the Sabres at least have in their back pocket.
So, despite finishing third in the Central, Billy Guerin, in my opinion, probably was the best general manager this year, like Team USA winning the gold and pulling that Quinn Hughes trade and, you know, having Jesper Wallstedt being the guy and all of that. But Quinn Hughes, Shayna, has had the puck on his stick for 30 minutes in the first round. The next closest player is Erik Karlsson at 18 minutes. How much of an impact do you think that changes the course of the Wild, not just for this year, but for the future?
I think the overtime's factored in a little bit there too, right? Probably bumped his numbers up a bit, but it's been a massive factor because you could see the difference in this team when he jumped into the lineup. You go back to the beginning of the season for the Wild, they had a really mediocre October. They found some traction in November when Zuccarello returned, but it did feel like the process wasn't quite matching the results. And that's something that usually isn't sustainable. You bring in Quinn Hughes and now all of a sudden you're getting that balance, right? He is a breakout machine. He has added so much pop on the back end, which is exactly what they were missing. You know, the Wild have always been a team that has those defensive strengths and their structure, but not a ton of pop, not a ton of pace, unless Kaprizov and Matt Boldy are doing something. But it feels like Quinn Hughes is exactly what they needed on the back end to get everybody going. And the way you see his feet moving every single shift as he's, you know, holding on to the puck and letting his teammates get into position, and he can just keep spinning away from opponents, that's huge. And it was massive against the Stars, who weren't doing that nearly enough and weren't doing enough to get to the middle of the ice. And I think the way he plays the game allowed the Wild to make life more difficult for Jake Oettinger. So it's going to be, you know, even more important in this upcoming series, because it's going to be Quinn Hughes against Cale Makar, two of the best defensemen in the world going head to head.
Who was the MVP of the series for you? Was it Quinn Hughes, Matt Boldy, or Wallstedt? And did you have Minnesota picked, or were you on Team Dallas?
I was on Team Dallas, but let's not listen to my picks because they were terrible this year. And next year, I'm making my picks before I take the influence of dogs, because I kept picking things going like, oh, they thought it. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to be like, I don't know why. Okay. I didn't pick the Wild, but I think we all knew this series was as close as it got. It was as close to a 50-50 matchup. And a lot of it depended on those Stars injuries. And I think not having Hintz was a massive loss, because instead you're seeing, I don't know, Jamie Benn out there in 6-on-5 situations, but I digress. MVP of the Wild. You could go Quinn Hughes here and you would not be wrong. I'm going to go Matt Boldy. I think Wallstedt was good, but I don't think he had to be great. I don't think Dallas forechecked well or drove to the middle of the ice or, you know, really got in his face nearly enough. And that was so true last night. But Matt Boldy has just been fantastic. And I think that made up for Kaprizov. He was good in the series, but not to his true MVP caliber levels that we know he has in him.
Okay, let's switch to the other team that lost and is out of the first round, the Edmonton Oilers, losing to the Anaheim Ducks in six games. Connor McDavid had some harsh words after the game, but we've said it on this show before with you, Shayna. The Oilers have regressed the last 2 years. Game 7 2 years ago against Florida, they went back to the finals last year, lost, and this year, 93 points, pillow fight of the, you know, Pacific Division. So where are the Oilers going from this loss moving forward?
Oh, the Oilers, where are they going? I think that front office is very misguided, as I've hammered home a million times before. And I think that the way the Oilers lost was the worst case scenario for them, because they can use the fatigue factor of going to the Stanley Cup final in 2 years, especially this year with the Panthers being out, right? Like, it's perfect. Like, hey, they went the same distance. One has trophies, one doesn't. But look how hurt they are. And the Oilers still managed to make the playoffs. That's one problem. The other part of it is that the Oilers were dealing with a number of injuries. And that was always going to be a factor here, right? Draisaitl and Hyman probably weren't 100%. We know Dickinson wasn't. And then McDavid gets hurt, which is just the killer of all killers here for Edmonton. They can use that to say that's why they lost. And they actually need this time to recover and you know, get healthy for next season. But that's not all that went wrong here, right? Because you look at them and say the goaltending was abysmal. Who would have thought of Tristan Jarry, Connor Ingram, Kreese would have been abysmal? You can't trust them. And what makes it even worse is that they don't have steady defense in front of them. Yes, Paul Coffey comes back and they turn things around post-Olympics, and that's all great and wonderful. But if you're bringing in a defensive assistant to be a fixer in February and you don't have it all year when you know your Kreese is this volatile, I think that's a recipe for disaster. And oops, they couldn't even play semi-competent defense in this series. So a million problems in Edmonton. They should have an aggressive offseason. They should be trying to get rid of the Darnell Nurse contract. They should be trying to get rid of Tristan Jarry's contract. But I also think that if you're letting the person run the show with 2 years left on Connor McDavid's contract, the man who brought in a buyout-proof contract in Tristan Jarry, I don't know what you're doing in the first place.
Who's their goalie next year?
Who's to say, right? Because they've had so many opportunities to upgrade that crease. And that's the thing. It's like, well, what were their options? Well, there's been so many goalie trades and goalie movement over the last couple of years. So right now, I'm going to say Tristan Jarry is one of them, because you can't move that deal.
Philip Gustafson.
Well, that's a great place to start, obviously. When you look at you look at tandems, and can you convince a team to give up one when they are likely to just roll with the other anyway?
Well, also trying to convince Gustafson, who has a no-movement clause.
Right. But let me just say this, and I just want it for everybody to hear. I think McDavid has matured in so many ways, which maybe you would think is automatic over the course of time, but I think he's carried so much over the years that sometimes it's very hard to be able to articulate just how you are feeling when you almost feel like you're speaking for others all the time because you have to be the voice of a team. But I don't know if I've ever heard a more succinct, appropriate post-game, after a series elimination, evaluation of one's team than McDavid saying, "We were an average team all year." When you're an average team with high expectations, you're going to be disappointed. What more needs to be said?
Nothing more should need to be said, because it's not the first time he's come out with comments like this either. You look at what he said after they get eliminated last year, and he's saying he needs to see the direction of this team to know, because winning is the biggest priority. And as the year's gone on, it's like, well, he doesn't speak all the time. He's not like, it, you know, making these big statements all the time, that when he makes them, you should listen. That should have been the biggest flag right there. Then the Tampa Bay comments, which I know he walked back, but he's saying, hey, we're in a pillow fight of a division, and the system top to bottom that Tampa Bay has is not something that the Oilers have. That foundation is bigger than just the NHL, right? It goes back to the AHL, goes back, you know, top down from the organization. That's what Tampa Bay has. That's what you should want. So even if he walks it back, you should be hearing that going, that's the bar, right, that he's looking for. And then he loses here and says they're an average team. And he's right. He's completely right, because it shouldn't be that if he's not 100%, this team is completely hopeless. There should be some, if they could have played a little bit of defense, this is a series. This should have been a winnable series for the Oilers.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Shayna, we're out of time. It is a game day here. Sabres looking to clinch. We'll see you next week. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. It's a Friday Sabres Live. We're on location in Boston. We'll wrap up the show next.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Looking to grab playoff merchandise and more from the comfort of your own home? Buffalo Pro Shop is the brand new online store of the Sabres and Bandits. Visit BuffaloProShop.com right now to shop exciting team gear and unique styles. Marty, we are up to date on our Sabres Live Twitter poll today.
Okay, yes.
And this had a lot to do with Bruins that are bothering you at this point in time. What are you seeing as far as... And what is surprising you? Which current Bruin bothers you the most?
So it's funny because Jeremy Swayman had a huge lead at the start of the show, but it's come back. Zadorov is closing in the gap, but he's still second. The one that bothers me most is Pasternak. Look, he's a great player. He should bother you, but it's the way that he does things. He's not the fastest. He's not the, you know, the quickest in acceleration, but he always finds the right time. He's a bit of a cherry picker, but it's not in cheating. It's more in anticipating the play. So all of that is bothering me. So I hope the Sabres play him tight like they did in game 3 and 4 in Boston. They do it again in Boston. They play Pasternak tight, and that won't bother me at the end of the night.
Happy 28th anniversary to this Sabres moment.
McGillis to the other side, kicked in by Buffalo Shannon. Shannon to Schmelik, into the corner to Groshek. Groshek twisting around. Here's Groshek keeping it in there. Groshek got it back in. Here's Chatan. Groshek kicking on the post. Scores! On the rebound, Michael Groshek. And the Buffalo Sabres are headed to the second round.
Amazing. Michael Groshek, they defeat the Flyers in 5. Remember, prior to Game 5 in this series, we were talking about the Sabres 7-0 all-time when leading a series 3-1. That was just one of the examples of them clinching. 5 of those 7 series wins were clinched in Game 5. 2 others were clinched in Game 6, like tonight's opportunity presents.
So that game in Philadelphia, Michael Groshek wins it for the Sabres in Game 5. I was a black ace, and we were sitting in the 300 level because there wasn't enough room in the press box. We ended up with tickets. We're sitting in the crowd. Mm-hmm. And here's a funny story. Jason Holland, who had a birthday yesterday, by the way. So he had a blue suit with a white shirt and a blue tie, and he had a book in his hand. He was reading a book. Well, he was standing by the entrance to the section, and people thought he was an usher. They kept asking him, hey, where's my seat? Where's my seat? We were dying. He looked like an usher. He was, in fact, an NHL player, all a black ace.
Our colleague at Sabres.com, Jordan LaBarber, has worn a very similar outfit on game nights to those that our ushers wear at KeyBank Center.
Yes.
So he, too, has had that moment in time where he's been misidentified.
Well.
Do you work here? Yes, but not in the capacity that you think. Happy birthday to Jim Lorenz. He's 79 today. And again, Jim's heroics tie in perfectly with where Buffalo is at right now. Jim had a game-winning goal against Montreal in Game 6 on the road in 1975 to get them into the Stanley Cup Final. And then the Batman aura came to be because of Jim's heroics in Game 4 on home ice against the Flyers to tie the series. And happy 79th to the longtime broadcast partner of Rick Jenneret. So all that being said, let's look at tonight real quick before we get back on the air at 7.
So, I mean, the Sabres off the rush are number one. The Sabres, when they dump the puck in, they're 16th in the NHL in recoveries, right? So you're looking at it and you're like, okay, you're going to have a balance, but the dump-ins may have to start first so you open up the rush. Hopefully they find their rush game.
All right, we will dive in a little deeper on both sides' lineups and stories that are definitely emerging in this one tonight in our pregame coverage at 7.